You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
Welcome to Sustainable Futures. On today's episode, we'll be interviewing Marcel Benton from PreventDisease.com. He is an investigative reporter. We're going to be talking about his specialty vaccines, particularly the swine flu vaccine, the H1N1 vaccine.
The majority of doctors and nurses worldwide do not get vaccinated. This is just a scientific fact. They've done polls and they know this. And there is an incredible amount of people that just don't understand that. That doctors and nurses, they don't get vaccinated. They don't roll up their sleeves because they know how many toxins are in these vaccines.
So that's coming up next. Stay tuned. I am Ryan Fletcher, and you're listening to Sustainable Futures. This is an excerpt from the song Like a Mountain by Victoria, BC artist Moira. Good afternoon. This afternoon's program is a very important program. I can't stress enough how big an issue this swine flu vaccine is going to be in the future. Not just an issue, a worldwide phenomenon. Very happy to have had a chance to interview Marcel Benton. He had a lot of great information about vaccines. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of vaccines, a bit about who he thinks is causing the big push for this mass vaccination, why the vaccine was created, all kinds of information for you on the H1N1 vaccine. If you don't know by now, there's going to be a mass vaccination coming through Canada, scheduled for the end of October and beginning of November. And it's being called a mandatory vaccination, but you don't actually have to take it. So you'll get some background information on a different viewpoint of what's going on here than you probably have heard in your newspapers or on the television or on your commercial radio stations. I'm very proud and pleased to be able to present this to you. It's very important. This is the first part of a 2-episode interview with Mr. Benton. In the first part, we're going to be talking mostly about the warnings and hard information about what's going on here. And in the second episode, next week's episode, we'll hear more about what you can do to help yourself build immunity to things like swine flus or the regular flus or any kind of big disease going around, and vaccinations. So in essence, the first part will be more of the problem, and the second part will be more of the solution. And here it is, an interview with Marcel Benton. This is Ryan Fletcher from Sustainable Futures, and I'm interviewing Marcel Benton from PreventDisease.com, and we're going to be talking about the swine flu and the swine flu vaccine. Welcome to the show, Marcel.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
And what is your background with the swine flu issue?
Well, I've completed postgraduate work in vocational health, but for the last 10 years, I've been primarily an investigative journalist and researcher. And, well, as a disclaimer, I'd just first like to say to your listeners to understand that I'm not a medical doctor or a health scientist of any kind, and any advice that I relay over this broadcast is about the swine flu is purely based on my experience as a public health investigator and the information I've obtained from my research. Mm-hmm. So that's the information I'll be translating to your audience and those facts, and I encourage all your listeners to do their own fact-based research, which is relatively important on this issue.
Yes, your health is very important.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. What are your feelings about the H1N1 vaccine?
Well, I've been investigating it for a while now. Actually, I've been investigating pandemic fears for some time, and, mm-hmm. and whether it's the bird flu or SARS or the swine flu, it all seems to be about an agenda to initiate fear. There's all sorts of agendas at play here, but there seems to be a very large pharmaceutical agenda. There's an agenda to acclimate the public, but there is also, and I know it's difficult to understand and grasp this concept, but there is a genocidal agenda at play here. And the more I investigate it, the evidence becomes more clear. It has nothing to do with disease prevention or preventing a pandemic. And it doesn't matter what path you take when you investigate all of these initiatives. If you investigate truthfully, without bias, and based on the facts, the conclusions are irrefutable. This is a Rockefeller-based organization that is engaging several partners and media moguls to unleash, basically, I can say, fear among the population. Mm-hmm. And create something that is not really there. And now, that doesn't mean that it could be in a few years, but right now, everything that you're hearing about the pandemic's creation, media persuasions, the vaccination preparations, all the health and official promotions of the diseases and the vaccines themselves, David Rockefeller and his organized partners are behind it. And there is a large body of evidence that establishes that, proves that, and there are several lawsuits right now. Dr. Len Horowitz is mm-hmm. probably one of the lead people out there that has initiated a lawsuit against them.
Hmm.
So, that being said, I don't have a good feeling about it. The more I study it, the more I research it, the more I write about it, the more I realize that it is a genocidal agenda, and it has a lot to do with eugenics and population reduction. And it
eugenics.
Has nothing to do with protecting the population from the pandemic that is about to come about.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us a little bit of background on Rockefeller and where that organization
well,
is coming
Rockefeller,
from?
The Rockefellers have been manipulating the population for decades, for nearly a century, and they have a firm grasp on the media and corporations that basically control the world. There's about six companies that control all media outlets in the world, and they have their feet dipped into most of them and into most of the executives and corporations that control them. And because of that, they are able to manipulate them to say whatever they want them to say. So the Rockefeller Organization itself, it's a eugenicist operation. And if your listeners are not familiar with eugenics and what eugenics is, I encourage them to look it up on the internet and review the information about what eugenicists do and what their objectives are. Right now, it seems that their objectives are population reduction.
Mm-hmm.
That they want to reduce the population of the world, and this is one of the ways they plan on doing it. They have several methods mm-hmm. at which they're exploring, but this is one of the methods. that they are pursuing. And unfortunately, a lot of people can't grasp the reality of the situation. It's difficult to speak to people about it because it's hard to convince people, even with the evidence, that all national governments are under this umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look into it deeply, it's not really that hard to believe. I mean, we know cigarettes cause cancer. Why do they continue selling them? We know fluoride causes cancer. Why do they continue putting it in our water?
Mm-hmm.
Pesticides, preservatives, they're all in our food, in our water, and they continue putting them in. So governments around the world are being irrational, and they're following this malicious stream of thought.
Mm-hmm. I want to just make an effort here at a loose definition of eugenics to make sure I actually myself understand it. I think there's an element of perfectionism to it, isn't there? Like, it's almost like breeding humans to have certain traits.
Essentially, that is what it is.
Yeah.
They want to discourage reproduction of inheritable traits and undesirable traits. So it's a belief in modifying the quality of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen this with almost every superpower that has ever taken over and every fascist government that has ever taken over. If you trace them back, there's always some element of eugenics in there. And it is about creating those superhumans, per se. Now, if we dig deeper into it, there are more elements, but it may be a little bit much for this discussion today. But if you dig into it enough and you do enough research, you'll realize that what's behind the entire operations of the world right now, whether it be political, social, economical, it is eugenics.
Mm-hmm.
And that is essentially what is behind the pandemic that we are seeing today. It has nothing to do with disease prevention. And I implore your listeners to please do their research online, and they'll realize very, very quickly that a lot of this is just fear-based. And before you begin vaccinating yourselves, your children, your family, you have to realize what the objectives of this are.
Mm-hmm. What's the connection between the vaccination and eugenics? I guess there's something rather deadly in these vaccines, or?
Well, the premise of vaccinations themselves is a complete fraud. If you trace back vaccines throughout their entire history, they're based on fraudulent science.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go all the way back to the 1800s, and you will find out that every single epidemic, all the way from the smallpox epidemic in the 1800s and late 1800s, to the Spanish flu epidemic in the early 1900s, which killed 30 to 50 million people, to all sorts of other epidemics which took place in the 20th century, a lot of them, actually all of them, can be traced back to vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
And what they seem to be trying to do with vaccinations is insert and manipulate vaccinations so that the population becomes primed for deadlier viruses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something more to discuss in depth with microbiologists,
mm-hmm.
but what it seems that they're doing is they're attempting to change our DNA structure through vaccines. For example, this virus is from various sources, and what they have done with it is they've made 66 changes on this virus from its original state. 66 changes on 6 chromosomes. And yeah, figure that out, 666. But they've made those changes, and they've made the virus a lot more lethal than it was originally.
Mm-hmm.
So the vaccinations themselves, the science is not completely out on what they are going to do to the population besides prime it. And we'll probably find out in another year or two,
mm-hmm.
but it seems that the vaccines are going to contain live viruses, only weakened or attenuated, that can cause some kind of disease. And they're also using them as social manipulation tools for large groups. and for the pharmaceutical agendas to, because they do want to profit in the process.
Right.
But the vaccinations themselves, if you trace them out throughout history, they have nothing to do with the prevention of disease. Nothing whatsoever. They depress the immune system. They are deadly bioaccumulatives that are contained in them. They contain adjuvants, which are toxins which induce neurological and autoimmune diseases. And besides depressing our immune systems, we know that there's faster viral genetic jumps to more pathogenic substrains. That has been evidenced in some of the research. There's what's called DNA plasma antigenic amplification in test vaccines. So they can switch genes on and off, and they're also doing this with genetically modified foods. That's another thing. A large portion of the population, which is still on the conventional food supply, they're susceptible to this as well, because genetically modified foods inherit some of the same techniques as vaccines do.
Uh-huh.
Overall, vaccines, because of their contents and what they have in them, the connection is deadly, to answer your question directly.
Mm-hmm. So then the question then is why? Why are the vaccines made?
Well, pharmaceutical companies cannot exist if they do not push disease on populations. It is not in the financial interests of pharmaceutical companies to prevent disease. They don't exist to prevent disease. They exist to treat the symptoms of disease. And there's a lot of people that seem to have trouble grasping that concept. We are never going to prevent disease as long as pharmaceutical companies exist. It's a certainty. So as long as the body will host disease, the pharmaceutical companies will flourish.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an essential component for this industry to exist. Now, as I said, why they're doing this, there's a lot of different reasons. The pharmaceutical agendas, there's the genocidal agendas, which tie into population reduction.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it all has to do with controlling the population.
Mm-hmm.
The vaccines allow the greater corporations and health agencies, international health agencies, to manipulate the populations, to make them think that they need vaccines to prevent disease, when in actually they do the reverse. And what we're finding out more and more is the people that are becoming vaccinated are becoming the deadliest hosts for disease.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not exactly sure, because we're not scientists, we're just investigating it, how exactly that's going to play out in the next few years. But from what we are researching, it is, the plots are really diabolical, very diabolical. We know that, for example, this particular virus, there are no mutations yet. So it is a relatively mild flu.
Uh-huh, yes.
But we don't know what's going to happen in a few years. We know that H1N1 is replicating about twice as fast as every other virus that has been studied along these lines. It's a bridge virus that eventually is supposed to acquire the genetics to kill millions of people per month. They have inputted this into advanced software, and this is what the conclusions of the software are saying.
Now, who
because
has
they made
done
these
that?
Changes to the chromosomes, the viruses themselves are more lethal, more pathogenic, and they are attacking certain tissues and systems and organs that could recombine it. They're using what's called recombinant DNA technology to develop mm-hmm. these viruses. And they're gender-specific, they're race-specific, actually gender-specific. We know that they're affecting women. So women who actually get infected with the virus, they're four times more likely to be submitted to the ICU. They are race-specific. For instance, SARS, we knew that SARS affected 15 to 16 times more Asians than any other race.
Mm-hmm.
H1N1 apparently has the same features, that attacks Asians more and Middle Easterns more.
Mm-hmm.
We know it targets the pulmonary system, tends to grow in the lungs, and it tends to be chronic. We've evidenced this in native populations in, on Flores Island in Vancouver, which
right,
we reported
yes.
on.
Yeah, so could you speak a little bit about this population on Flores Island? This this is a pretty recent story. Yes, yeah.
Well, we reported on that, and what we found were that the people that were coming down with H1N1 on Flores Island, the conditions were becoming chronic in those native populations. They had fever, coughing, headaches, all sorts of symptoms of that sort, but it was chronic. They couldn't get rid of it. And some of the other flus in the past, people could get rid of them relatively easier. This one seems to linger a little bit more. But what we reported on that specific population is that public health officials in BC were telling the doctors to stop sending the swabs. So they had all of these people who were coming down with the H1N1 virus, and they were diagnosing all of them with H1N1 without testing them.
Huh.
So this is part of the strategy that is being used by the World Health Organization, is they want to diagnose every flu as H1N1 without confirming it with laboratory analysis. So they're using a form of junk science because they know that is the only way to induce enough media reports to scare the population into getting the vaccine.
Uh-huh.
And it's a complete fabrication is what they're doing.
Now, there was something on the news today.
Most of the symptoms that people are coming down with are very mild, and they're not causing deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And we've witnessed all this already in the Southern Hemisphere, in Argentina and Australia. There's been no mutation so far of the virus at all, and people are saying that the symptoms are just like any other flu or even more mild. And yet they're hyping this up, and nobody knows why.
I just want to speak about something that was on the news today. I'm getting this secondhand information from other people who have read the news today, mind you. I haven't read the news. But there is something about if someone has had a flu shot in the past year, they're more
That's
susceptible
right.
to the vaccine. So
that's right.
Yeah.
That information came out actually a few days ago.
Okay.
And what they have found is that those who have been exposed to the flu vaccines from last year or even the year before, any flu vaccine for that matter, if you have been in recent contact with a flu vaccination, you are more susceptible to develop H1N1 flu.
Uh-huh.
As to how relevant that is, we're not really sure. Because all vaccines tend to depress the immune system, it only makes sense.
Yes.
But if there is a degree of truth to that, to those studies, then it just further validates what everybody is saying, is that the vaccines are immunosuppressive, and they are suppressing everybody's immune system so they can't fight against future diseases.
Yeah.
And this is what part of the plan is.
The strategy I can see behind that, as just from a critical viewpoint, is that since you can guess a lot of people have had the flu shot in the past year, then these are people that are going to theoretically go and get the H1N1 now because they were told to, right?
I'm glad you brought that up because in Canada, they're not doing this in the United States, but in Canada, health officials are taking a different approach, which is, I guess we can say it's more beneficial for the population in some respects. They're encouraging people, if they get the H1N1 vaccine, to not have the flu shot, whereas in the United States, they're just pumping them full of every vaccine that exists.
Mm-hmm.
So in Canada, they're taking a different approach. They're being more cautious because they don't have the data that suggests that taking the flu vaccine and taking the H1N1 vaccine is effective or safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do we have as individuals as rights?
In terms of vaccinations?
Yes, yeah.
Well, most developed countries, their constitutions don't allow mandatory vaccinations, including the United States, including Canada. You can't enforce vaccinations. You can't make people get vaccinations against their will. Now, that being said, there is a lot of things that have been in play in the last 4 or 5 years that have allowed international agencies to manipulate those dynamics in the constitutions of different countries. For instance, in the United States, there's all sorts of new laws for public readiness and emergency preparedness. And in the U.S., they're using laws designed specifically for dealing with deadly pandemics and bioterrorism. And what they're doing is they're removing liability from the manufacturer and medical practitioners. This is a very dangerous precedent because, and there's all sorts of people that have brought this up in both Canada and the U.S., and it's going to allow manufacturers to, it gives them a license to kill, essentially, because there's no retribution at all if something happens to the victims and it is the fault of the manufacturer. But they have national security directives in the United States. They have homeland security directives and national emergency acts, which override their constitution. Now, in Canada, it's pretty much the same thing. If you're signed onto the WHO, we had an article on preventdisease.com which talked about impending mandatory vaccinations and how they can override the laws. The Public Health Agency of Canada, they stated on their own website that there's international health regulations which provide a framework under the Health World Organization to protect against any kind of pandemic. Those charters started in 2005. They were updated in 2007 by the WHO. Now, Canada signed on to the WHO just as are 194, 197 other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Under those charters, they have the authority to dissolve Canada's government on emergency planning and mandatory vaccinations. And it's stipulated on those documents. You can go on the WHO website yourself and view them. So
they can overrule? Is that what you're saying? They can overrule Canada's...
They can overrule, that's right. You'll have every government official, even Ontario's premier was out there, McGuinty, saying that we can't enforce people to have vaccinations, but... If there is an actual pandemic where you have hundreds of thousands or millions of people dying, then the WHO can override that, and those emergency planning policies kick in, and they can enforce them, which means anybody can be vaccinated against their will. The Public Health Agency of Canada has absolutely no details or restrictions in terms of who can administer the vaccinations and how. Which means they can be done by the military, they can be done by the police, and against the will of Canadian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the same thing in the United States. They have them in most countries in the world, actually. Now, under the WHO, they have mechanisms in place that can bypass the country's constitution to override the rights and freedoms of people for pandemic preparedness, which is a dangerous precedent.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like what we're seeing on this front. We're doing more and more research in these areas, and there seems to be a consensus across the world to dismantle any type of protection that exists in every country. And a lot of people in Canada think that they're exempt from those types of policies, but they're not. We're seeing them more enforced in the United States, but there are, for instance, certain provinces, Quebec is one of the examples where they are trying to pass laws now to enforce mandatory vaccinations. There are certain bills in place, Bill C-51, C-52 formerly, and now it's C-6, and they keep trying to pass these bills to take away the freedoms of the people. And those are more for supplements and protecting yourself with natural organic foods and superfoods.
But then that is connected. I can see a connection there for sure.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a connection. And every single government that comes into play in Canada or the U.S., and it doesn't matter who it is, a lot of people get hung up on, oh, the Liberals are doing this, or the Conservatives are doing this, or the NDP is doing this, or the Bloc Québécois is doing this. It doesn't really matter who comes into power. Those policies do not change. So, you know, not to get into the political realm, but... Those people who think that Ignatieff is going to do a much better job than Harper, and I'm for neither, by the way, are going to be sadly mistaken when they see what types of policies come about from those types of leaderships. They're there as basically puppets. just as the President of the United States is. And mm-hmm. they are controlled by puppeteers, master puppeteers, international banks who have high stakes in this country. They're the ones that call the shots, and they're the ones that decide what is going to be done on an international scope. We have this Codex Alimentarius, which is supposed to come into effect December 31st. We did a report on that on PreventDisease.com in, I believe it was in August. A lot of people don't even know what that is. If you are signed on to the WHO with Codex, it's one of the major bodies behind the effort to limit access to all sorts of nutritional products and information. What it is and who's behind that is the United Nations and the World Health Organization in conjunction with pharmaceutical companies and international banks. And so they want to limit all dietary supplements, all nutrients that have positive impact on health. They want to restrict all sorts of potencies of vitamins,
mm-hmm.
all advice from nutritional experts. They want to reintroduce deadly pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
They want to require prescriptions on all sorts of minerals and superfoods. They want to bring back the mandatory use of growth hormones and fish and livestock. It's just an absolute nightmare. The list goes on and on and on. And this is supposed to come into effect in December 31st of this year.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear this on the news. You never hear it talked about on mainstream media. The only place you can find out about it is on the internet, which is ridiculous.
You're listening to investigative reporter Marcel Benti talking about the H1N1 vaccine, the swine flu vaccine, on Sustainable Futures, CJSF 90.1 FM.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to get back to the eugenics topic. So obviously there's some people that they want to save. And how does that happen? How do some people get protection and others not?
Well, I think at the end of the day, there is very few people that they want to save by eugenic standards.
Yeah.
But what seems to be happening is there is going to be a reduction in the population. And I mean, I know everybody has different views on this, and I don't want to alarm your listeners if I haven't already, but there are different views on this, but there are several experts on eugenics and who have studied eugenicists for some time now who have said that there is going to be population reduction initiatives in the next few years, which could tally into the billions. Now, how they're going to do that, we don't know. My advice to your listeners is don't trust the government to keep you healthy,
mm-hmm.
because you're going to get a lot of disinformation, a lot of misinformation. And the only person that can keep you healthy is yourself. So the people that are going to suffer chronic illnesses, diseases, plagues, and are going to essentially die from a lot of these chronic illnesses are those who are going to be entrenched in this false paradigm of conventional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are going to be vaccinated, those who are going to stick to conventional foods, which have an abundance of pesticides, herbicides, genetically modified components, which also, by the way, have the ability to turn genes on and off. People that are going to expose themselves on a daily basis to toxins, that don't understand concepts on how to detoxify their bodies. I think these are the ones that they're targeting right now, because they know through different techniques that they are utilizing, and there's a lot of different ones that they use besides the food. They spray poisons in the air,
mm-hmm.
As well, and heavy metals. It seems all about, from our investigations, it seems to be a lot about heavy metals. And the more people that absorb heavy metals into their bodies and cannot release those heavy metals or cannot excrete those heavy metals, those are the people that seem to have their brains and nervous systems affected, and those are the people that will perish first, per se. To get back to your question, the people that will be saved at first it's going to be survival of the fittest. It's going to be the people who are strongest, mm-hmm. who are healthiest. But they have other plans for those people, obviously.
Mm.
Did you have some other interpretation of how they're going to save people yourself? Or
I'm just wondering, because these things are pretty broadly applicated. So if you're trying to make everyone else sick, then you're risking making yourself sick as well, right?
And you know, that's a very good point, because a lot of the elites in the world, royalty, high government officials, whenever they travel to every single other country, you know, they bring their own foods. They don't need our foods. They don't eat the foods from the conventional food supply. They eat organic foods. They eat superfoods. They don't get vaccinated. The majority of doctors and nurses worldwide do not get vaccinated. This is just a scientific fact. They've done polls, and they know this.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an incredible amount of people that just don't understand that doctors and nurses, they don't get vaccinated. They don't roll up their sleeves because they know how many toxins are in these vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting poll in Canada, actually, which was done by the Worldwide Independent Network of Market Research, this is 1 in 5, so 20% of Canadians are worried about the swine flu. So it looks like Canadians have more trust in terms of the rest of the world in their government and their healthcare systems to deal with the H1N1.
Yeah, we do.
But they had also additional polls which show that only 40% of Canadians agree that Canada is well prepared for a massive outbreak. So what does that tell you? It means that 60% of Canadians do not believe that Canada is prepared, yet only 80% of Canadians are not worried, from that Worldwide Independent Network of Market Research poll.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers don't add up. There's a lot of people that are not understanding the gravity of the situation that we are in right now. And I implore your listeners to just get out there, do the research, and do not take the vaccines. If you are, first of all, it is illegal for any employer to force you to take the vaccines. But we are getting reports in that some employers are trying to make employees take the vaccine, which is against the law. It's against the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It's against the U.S. Constitution as well. So they're not allowed to do that, but they're trying to get around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just illegal.
Mm-hmm. Someone can say no then and resist it.
You can absolutely say no.
Yes.
And they cannot fire you for that. But we have reports from Quebec, we have reports from Toronto, where there are healthcare companies and healthcare workers who are being threatened with being fired if they don't take the flu vaccines.
Now, is that
legal? There's a lot of...
That doesn't seem very legal to me either.
No, and it's not, and it's not. And if there are Canadians or Americans listening out there, it is against the law. There are no laws in place to force you to take a vaccine, none whatsoever. So if your employer attempts to make you take a vaccine, they are breaking the law. Now, there are these resolutions from the WHO in cases of emergencies and pandemics, which are different, and we're hoping that those are worst-case scenarios and they won't get to that. But as it stands, no one can make you get a vaccine or force the injection on you.
Now, it seems to me that maybe we should get out of the World Health Organization.
I agree with you, Ryan. That is probably one of the best things that we can do. There's a lot of coercion, economic, political, for countries to sign on to the WHO.
Mm-hmm.
The chances of the Canadian government being released from those agreements, and they're usually in a span of 3 years, I believe, the chances are very low. And we should get out of those agreements.
Mm-hmm.
If the government of this country, of Canada, were to be interested in the health of their citizens, they would get out of those agreements. But unfortunately, the government of Canada, the government of the United States, they are not interested in keeping people healthy because of their relationships with the pharmaceutical companies, and they need people in a diseased state
mm-hmm.
to exist because of the amount of money that these companies generate.
Mm-hmm. Another possible solution might be form a new country.
Well, that's a reality in the United States. There is I believe there was over 20 states which were attempting to declare independence from the Federal Republic. In terms of Canada, yeah, it's another solution. Again, that becomes a political issue. There's always some type of coercion for all provinces to stay as a unit rather than to separate. And the sovereignty of the country depends on that, they'll say, or it's an issue of economics and debt. And there's always something, an issue that they come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Quebec has been trying for decades to separate from Canada. And, you know, rightfully so, in some respects, and not all respects, but in some respects, they may be better off for certain decisions, and other ones perhaps not. But, you know, it all depends on the citizens, and the governments have to listen to their citizens, and that's one of the problems, is that governments around the world, especially in the United States and Canada, are not listening to their citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are not standing up for their rights. And I think that's about to change in the next few years. To what degree, we're not sure, but I think it will change.
Mm-hmm. Personally, that's what of most interest to me about this subject is, it is a very visible divider. I think our population is still somewhat complacent right now with everything that's going on in the world. But if you try to force vaccinations, that's going to wake a bunch of people up, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's a bright
side. The mandatory vaccinations issue is all about removing liability. It's all about creating some type of system or treaty where they can control populations more. It's to acclimate the public. So if they... It's to get the public used to this type of system where, oh, there's going to be diseases or there's going to be all these outbreaks of diseases and oh, we have to be afraid of that or afraid of this. And there's this disease that's going to kill millions. And if we don't get inoculated or vaccinated, that we are going to die. And it's a false reality. And it's based on our junk science. We have an excellent article on PreventDisease.com about junk science and how the WHO basically uses junk science to make their claims and assert them on other countries. And they're just myths. For instance, for H1N1, they say it's the dominant virus strain, and they have no proof at all, none, because they don't get laboratory analysis for the strains.
Mm-hmm.
They say that, for instance, pregnant women are more vulnerable, which is not true. Pregnant women, you know, have been identified as being a risk of complications, but to date, there's no well-documented cases at all or studies in any country that establish that pregnant women have an increased risk for pandemic flu. None whatsoever. Yet they are just gung-ho on vaccinating pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they have a fetish on this. They really do, to put it bluntly. They really want to vaccinate the majority of women who are pregnant. And it's the worst thing you can do to your unborn child, because by targeting pregnant women, what they're doing is they're just attempting to instigate fear so that women will activate their maternal protective instincts and go and get vaccinated. But it's having the reverse effect, and most polls are showing that very few pregnant women want to absolutely take the swine flu vaccine.
Yeah, so, I think maybe the maternal instinct is smarter than that.
Well, and that's proof right there. You're very right, because the percentage of women who want to get it is very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's always going to be people who are entrenched in this false paradigm of conventional medicine who will do whatever they say. And unfortunately, no matter how much evidence you bring to these people, they just won't listen.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I have learned to understand over the years is that it doesn't matter how much information or evidence you introduce to people. If they are not ready to accept the information, it just goes in one ear and out the other. And a lot of people don't talk about that, and there's a lot of information on the Internet on that. But the false reality that we're living in our political system and the world itself, and for people to come out of that reality and realize what's really going on, very painful. It's a painful experience to know what actually controls and runs the world. And when people come out of that false reality and they wake up, you become so empowered because you realize what actually controls the motors that run the world.
Yeah.
And when you realize that, you break through so many discoveries about yourself, about your health, about your relationships, and things just become, in terms of the entertainment level, they become insignificant. You start watching a lot less TV. You really start arguing less with your peers and your family members because you start to realize what life is all about.
I think this might be a good place to start talking about natural immunity.
Yeah, and this is something that everybody should speak with, perhaps not to your medical doctor about, unless they are very well versed on natural medicine, but a natural health practitioner, a naturopathic doctor, they may be able to give you a lot of advice. From our research, what we have found is that if you use common sense, you can reduce the incidence of a lot of colds. I mean, wash your hands as often as possible. You know, most germs are going to spread from just touching things. A lot of these viruses can live on hard surfaces for at least 2 or 3 hours. So if you sanitize your hands with warm water and soap and wash them for about 15 to 20 seconds, you can reduce the incidence of infection by a relatively high percentage. If you know there's an outbreak, for instance, there's outbreaks in different cities in the world. There was just an outbreak in Montreal. If you know there's an outbreak in your area, then stay away from crowded situations and public areas if you can, because even if you don't touch something with your hands, people can still spread the virus airborne. If you're in close contact with somebody, if they sneeze or they could cough and you're close, it's spread through contact with mucous membranes. So you have to use some common sense in that respect. In terms of strengthening immunity, this is something that we have a few articles on preventdisease.com about. And if you use immune-strengthening herbs and nutrients, vitamins A, C, D, and E, and minerals like selenium and magnesium, if you use all sorts of important antioxidant nutrients, you can really support and boost your immune functioning, which will give you the biggest chance of fending off, even if you get the H1N1 virus, of fending it off.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of virus-fighting herbs that you can use as well. There's lemon balm. There's St. John's wort. There's marjoram. There's oregano oil, rosemary. There's a really good antioxidant called astaxanthin. And I encourage all your listeners to read up on astaxanthin. It's a very potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. And according to Dr. Russell Blaylock, who's done a lot of work with the vaccine truth movement, even people that are vaccinated, fatal reactions to vaccines can be prevented just with astaxanthin, they have found. So that's something to look into. Vitamin D is huge, vitamin D3, which is the only vitamin that the body can manufacture from sunlight. If you can get it from the sun, great. It's getting cold now in the northern hemisphere, so if you can migrate south and get a good dose that way, that's the best way. Otherwise, you can supplement with vitamin D3, which is the active form of vitamin D, and it's a huge immune booster. Anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D is apparently adequate for most people, but check with your doctor, get your vitamin D tested to find out exactly how much you should have. The other thing you can have is flavonoids. Curcumin and quercetin have been found to block the ability of adjuvants. And that's one big thing that I have to mention in vaccine, are adjuvants. And flavonoids can block the ability of the adjuvants to trigger long-term immune reactions. The adjuvants are what they're putting in a lot of these vaccines now, and they haven't been tested. There actually are no laws in Canada or the United States which allow the use of adjuvants in vaccines. And yet, they are still going to inoculate the populations with adjuvanted vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that myself. I don't understand how the government allows it. I think it has to do with the WHO and what they have allowed them to bypass through the normal regulatory laws that exist. But adjuvanted vaccines are lethal. They are very dangerous. There is very little testing done on them. And what they do is they create acute and chronic neurological and autoimmune diseases, such as multiple sclerosis. There was Guillain-Barré syndrome, which was in the 1976 flu scare. A lot of people came down. I believe it was about 500 people that came down with that. Some people actually died. And they gave the manufacturers at that time immunity and liability, just like they're doing today, from those damages. So there was several thousand people that saw benefits from those injuries. I think there was about 50 or 60 people that died from that. But that is one of the complications. But they're trying to attempt to give manufacturers immunity from being sued. The Canadian Medical Protective Association is going to be pressured to not protecting doctors and nurses for participating in vaccination programs because they know the effects. That's the other thing about some of these vaccines that I have to say, Ryan, is that the testing protocols that they use are absolutely ridiculous. They test the vaccines, and they claim, and the Public Health Agency of Canada claims, that they have the strongest enforcement on safety and efficiency in terms of how they protect the population. It's ludicrous, because they test these vaccines a month or two before they inoculate the public. Sometimes they don't even get the results, and they're already testing the populations with the actual vaccines that are still going through the trials.
Yeah. And if that's
GlaxoSmithKline is a very good example. They just started the trials. And they're going to inoculate the Canadian population in late October, November. And the trials aren't even complete.
Yeah. If that's not something that will make a person suspicious, then I don't know what
I agree. If that is not something that makes people think about what is going on here, I don't know what there is. How can you use the population as one big vaccine experiment? That's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of vaccine trials that are going on that are they're testing the vaccines that don't have adjuvants in them, and then they're giving the population the adjuvanted vaccines, which is, again, it's ridiculous. How are you going to test for one thing and then give the population something else? So the Public Health Agency of Canada has absolutely no credibility, in my opinion, and the opinions of several others, and that's growing exponentially as we approach the inoculation periods now in November. If you get vaccinated with one of these H1N1 vaccines, you are simply playing roulette, in my opinion, with your health.
So this is the cutoff point for the first part of this two-part special on our interview with Marcel Benty on the H1N1 vaccine. If you would like a copy of this episode or any other episode of Sustainable Futures, you can acquire those on our website called radioforall.net. That's a number four. www.radio4all.net, and put Sustainable Futures in the search bar and you will find us there. Thank you for listening. I hope you found this episode very valuable and informative. Next week, we'll talk more about the solution side of things. So thank you for listening to Sustainable Futures, and I'm wishing you a sustainable future.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.